Are you ready?
It's Friday, Friday, Friday,
Friday.
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're lying, dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank damn speakers.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a happy First Amendment Friday, and I want to talk about the Biden crime family's plot to assassinate President Trump. I'll give you the details. I'll cite my sources. And of course, as is true on every other First Amendment Friday, we invite your phone calls. Every subject under the sun is fair game at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, I'm going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And of course, you can always vote in our poll on X, a different question every single day. Now, this one's going to seem kind of odd, but for a First Amendment Friday, I thought it fit like a T. Delta Airlines and its top DEI officer have now banned the gate announcements for Delta Airlines using the term ladies and gentlemen. They generally use that term to get your attention so they can tell you something important like we're about to board or first class goes first or something like that. Over the last few years, Fox Business reports Delta Airlines has embraced diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if you see how that worked out at Boeing, it might give you pause about flying these days. But under the purview of a chief DEI officer who believes that the phrase ladies and gentlemen is not inclusive. So, for a First Amendment Friday, a simple question. Do you find the term ladies and gentlemen offensive? I don't, so I'm going to say no. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, if you find it outrageous that I might say the Biden crime family has had a plot to assassinate President Trump and they've been aided and abetted in that plot, no, I don't have my tinfoil hat on too tight today. They've been aided and abetted in that plot by, among others, Homeland Security, the FBI, the Secret Service, and others. Let me give you the details, and then I'll be glad to take the naysayer calls, because as you know, this show has loved naysayers for the last quarter of a century. I never tell you something I don't honestly believe, but I also decided early on, we got to make sure that people who disagree with me get a chance to explain why they disagree. So let me make the case this way, and I'll cite some of the great investigative reporting of a friend of mine, John Solomon. His site is Just the News. John has worked for some of the top news names in America, except most of those, like the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, major networks, have all gone sideways. They've all decided to carry water for whatever political side they identify with, in this case, the left side of America and the Democrat Party. So, what did we find out in the last 24 hours? There's a man by the name of Asif Raza Merchant. And who is Asif Raza Merchant? Merchant. He's a Pakistani man who was illegally in the United States, and he was allowed to be illegally in the United States by... No, he didn't just walk across the border from Mexico, Central, or South America. He flew into a major intercontinental airport in Houston, Texas. And he was identified fairly quickly because the FBI says this guy's on the terrorist watch list. And he's also traveled recently to Iran. So, of course, he drew their attention. In fact, he drew so much attention, and I'm citing from government documents, Asif Raza Merchant flies into Houston Intercontinental Airport. The FBI stops him. Homeland Security questions him. In fact, it wasn't just the FBI. It was their Joint Terrorism Task Force. They said, this guy is on the terrorist watch list. Let's have a chat with him. So they sat him down. They photographed him, they fingerprinted him, they inspected the contents of his electronic devices, smartphones, iPads, laptops, that kind of thing. They did all that. And then you know what they did? You're going to say, well, if they were sensible, they put him back on the airplane to fly back to wherever he came from. That is not what the FBI did. The FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force took this joker and they said, hey, you can have a pass to stay in America for the next month. He came in April of this year, and they said, you can stay until May the 11th because you're visiting a family member in Texas. That's the lie that he told them. Now, did he stay in Texas? You already know the answer to that one. In fact, the FBI's memo on this guy, Asif Raza Merchant, says subject was polite and cooperative throughout the encounter. Subject's notable travel outside of the country of citizenship includes a recent trip to Iran. Now, what did they do? They cut him loose and said, leave the country by May the 11th, 1 month from now. Now, you probably already know the answer to this one. Did Asif Raza Merchant leave the United States of America as he had been told by the people who gave him special parole? They call it significant public benefit parole. Now, the guy says, I'm coming to visit family members in Texas. Where is the significant public benefit to having some foreign national come into the United States? He's on the terrorist watch list. He's traveled to Iran, and he says he's visiting his family in Texas. I don't see any significant public benefit to that. The guy wasn't coming in to start a new business. The guy wasn't coming in to invest in the United States. He was coming in to see family. So he disappears. And on May the 11th, does this guy leave the United States? No, he does not. In fact, he's around in the United States because we know the next fact that we know about Asif Raza Merchant, he was arrested on July the 12th. Now, if that date seems significant to you, it's because the next day, July the 13th, was the day that a sniper tried to blow Donald Trump's head apart and actually managed to nick his ear with a bullet that would have killed him if he hadn't turned his head, thank God. So, Merchant was arrested the day before that attempted assassination. He appears to have had nothing to do whatsoever with what happened in Pennsylvania, but these days, who knows? The FBI and Homeland Security take him into custody. He is currently sitting in custody, accused of plotting to assassinate Donald Trump. As I said, there's no evidence to say he was tied to the Pennsylvania attempt. This was apparently another attempt to assassinate Donald Trump. And who was it backed up by? It was backed up by Iran. This guy was on the watch list. He was denoted as a lookout qualified person of interest, and they let him into America. They might have done it because they said, well, we'll just let him roam around America. We don't know what he's planning to do, but we'll see what he's going to do. Basically using America as bait for a guy on the terrorist watch list. And then you've got to consider, we still don't have solid answers to this. Number one, the Secret Service was abundantly negligent on July the 13th in Butler County, PA. They effectively had no communication with local law enforcement, which means when local cops were alerted to a man on the roof of that building on that event on July 13th, it was at least minutes ahead of time that they were alerted to the man on the building, and local law enforcement could not tell the Secret Service so they could take the guy out before he shot. They took him out after he shot, and Secret Service itself knew there was a suspicious man on property at least 30 minutes ahead of time. And this guy was behaving weirdly anyway. Thomas Crooks, he brought a rangefinder to a speech by a political candidate. That alone should tell you he was up to no good, and it turns out he was. And so was Asif Raza Merchant, allowed into America by Joe Biden's DOJ and FBI. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
President of the United States always knew where to put the blame.
You have blamed mistakes of the past, and you blame the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Oh, folks, have I got a deal for you. Buy my house for a dollar. Now, the deal does come with strings, of course. I get to keep living in the house after you buy it for a dollar. You pay half of my remodeling costs, and then I can stay as long as I want to, and I can leave anytime I want to. Oh, and by the way, if I leave, then you won't have a tenant for my house. Oh, and by the way, I don't want to have to pay any property taxes. The deal lets me out of that. Now, if you think that sounds like one of the dumbest deals you've ever heard, you're absolutely right. Only it's exactly the deal that Portland just cut for the Portland Trail Blazers. You see, Portland, the city government, has decided to buy the Moda Center for $7 million. It currently belongs to the estate of Paul Allen. The Blazers get to escape from $1.2 million in annual property taxes the Moda Center now pays. The team already gets a screaming good deal. Moda's worth about a half a billion. It pays property taxes as though it were worth less than 20% of that figure. I'd love to have that kind of deal myself. Charge me 20% of my regular property taxes. Sign me up. Now, nobody knows exactly how much the remodel is going to cost, so we're kind of buying a pig in a poke. But the taxpayers, under Ted Wheeler, have now said they're going to front half of the cost for the private company known as the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers are then free to leave in 5 years, and the city could end up with a big empty venue and no anchor tenant like Memorial Coliseum. Imagine this, the Blazers leave, and the city says, well, we now own the Moda Center. What should we put in there? Can we attract another ball team that wants to use it? Good luck with that. And who cut this extraordinarily stupid deal? Well, that would be trust fund multimillionaire feckless Ted Wheeler, who strolls out of the mayor's office in just a few months after laying waste to the rest of the city, and he never has to look back. Thanks for coming on First Amendment Friday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, I'll get to your calls in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com and vote in our X poll. Today's X poll question goes this way. Do you find the term, ladies and gentlemen, offensive? Delta Airlines is banning its use because they say it's not inclusive. I think that's stupid. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Our question of the day comes in from Russ. And Russ says, Lars, I occasionally buy Hint bottled water, stout bottles, only because I refill them with water many times before I return the bottle. Just checking to see if they still sell it and whether or not it's SNAP eligible. I wonder if Soda Pop is SNAP eligible. I'm afraid to find out. Well, it turns out it is. You can take food stamps, which they now call SNAP, and buy Soda Pop with it. And by the way, when you take the bottles and cans back, the person on EBT or SNAP gets the money back in their pocket. It does not go back to the taxpayers. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give the grill to Janelle Bynum. Nearly a month ago, member of Congress Lori Chavez de Remer nailed down four debates with local media outlets. Her opponent, Janelle Bynum, who's always had a racial chip on her shoulder, is ghosting her challenge to debate. And Bynum has a lot to defend, praising the riots of 2020, endorsing the full drug legalization in Measure 110 that's killed thousands of people in the Northwest, proposing new laws on behalf of the defund the police mobs, and insisting on the release of thousands of convicted criminals in prison. I guess you can understand why Bynum is currently hiding in her Biden-style bunker. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more, comes from Bruce in Kirkland, Washington. Hey, Lars, with your sizable audience east of the Cascades, I hope you're going to implore them to get behind Dave Reichert as the GOP nominee for governor in our state. I will. Regardless of who they supported in the primary, I'd go further. I'd speak directly to Semi Bird, and we've tried to talk to him. Semi Bird does not want to come on the program anymore because we found out about the lies he told to the military, but we'll keep on asking him. ask him whether he's going to act like a petulant child who didn't get what he wanted for Christmas, thus becoming a footnote in Washington history and a person with no future in elective politics. Is he going to do the right thing? Strongly endorse and work for the election of Dave Reichert as governor. Disaffected Democrats and independents, they backed Mark Mullett. I think those people look to him as somebody representing an anti-Ferguson position. Reichert is closer to Mr. Mullett in tone, temperament, and policies than is Bob Ferguson. Many Mullett backers are, I think, persuadable, even if a disgust with Bob Ferguson doesn't automatically move them into the Dave Reichert camp. Ferguson did well, but he didn't get 50%. It'd be a shame if the hyper-partisan AG wins because Semi Byrd didn't do the right thing. Byrd extols his military background, just like Tim Walz does too, and they have similar problems. His backers and the people who chose him need to tell him it's time to straighten up and fall in, soldier. There is a battle to be won. Signed, Bruce Hay in Kirkland, Washington. To your calls, let's start with Lynn in Seattle on the Radio Northwest Network and KVI. Hey, Lynn, what's on your mind on First Amendment Friday?
Hi. The primaries occurred. I did vote Haley. And both Trump and Biden became the presumptive nominees.
Yep.
And thank goodness tragedy didn't occur in regards to the Trump shooting. But what would the Republicans have done differently compared to Biden's withdrawal? Because can't anyone decide to run and seek state delegate support?
Well, here's the thing. Most of the delegates after the primaries and the caucuses were chosen and they were where you're locked into one candidate, usually for the first or second ballot at the convention. So you're a delegate.
Yeah.
You've agreed to represent your people. What should have happened with the Democrats? They should have gone to their convention, which still hasn't happened yet. It's almost 2 weeks away. They should have held their convention, asked the delegates. You were committed to, that's the term, you were committed to Joe Biden. Joe's not in the race anymore. So who do you want to pick as the nominee for president? The Democrats did not do it the Democratic way. That is what I would hope Republicans would do, is say, if our candidate somehow disappeared, we would have arrange a meeting, because the Republicans have already held their convention, and say we need to pick a new nominee, but we will let the representatives of the people make that pick. The Democrats did not do that.
So they did that virtual count with the delegates and got, I don't know, the number that they needed.
They got the number, but they didn't ask the delegates, who do you want to be the nominee? They just said, this is your nominee, vote for her. Does that sound like a democratic process to you?
Well, I don't know. Do you think Kamala should have challenged Biden in the primary then, or...
No, I mean, that has happened. I mean, you can have a vice president. It doesn't happen very often, but you could have a vice president challenge a sitting president. Not likely, but she should have gone to the convention and presented herself to the delegates and said, I'd like to be your nominee. They didn't do it that way. They wired it up tight the way the Democrat Party always does.
The Lars Larson Show. Nixon was wrong about a lot of things, but he's right about this.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
What say you, Joe Biden? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to First Amendment Friday as well. Glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment, but I want to talk to a former member of Antifa and about the activists who support their causes. He's the author of a brand new book called Anti-Fascist, a memoir of a Portland uprising 2016 to 2020, and his name is Luis Marquez. Mr. Marquez, welcome to the program.
Hey, Lars. Thanks for having me on today. How you doing?
Now, are you still a current member of Antifa, or do you consider that a past chapter of your life?
Lars, I consider myself an anti-fascist for life.
Okay, now
always
tell me,
an anti-fascist.
Describe for my audience, what is an anti-fascist? Because I have to be honest with you, I've seen a lot of folks who call themselves Antifa behave in a rather fascist way, if you will. Why is that?
I can only speak for myself. What an anti-fascist is someone who ultimately believes in freedom. We are against authoritarianism, against fascism, against monarchy, and against communism, against Stalinism.
And yet in Portland, when, because you focused on that in this book, Anti-Fascist, in Portland, what we saw was mobs in the streets who made demands of the government and said, defund the police, all cops are bastards, things like that. And it didn't exactly benefit public safety or the freedom of everybody else in the city. And I'm being honest with you, that's the way it worked out. And it was effectively, do this or we'll burn buildings down. Now, did I misunderstand the message?
Well, I see it a very different way. I see it in the words of the great Dr. Martin Luther King, who said, a riot is the voice of the unheard, right? I think that people were tired of being unheard. I think that specifically here in Portland, we have a police force that is brutal. We have known racist officers, I believe, still currently on force, specifically Officer Mark Kruger. We can't be okay with that.
Now, you think he's racist. I'm somewhat familiar. I don't know the man personally, but he had a hobby of collecting Nazi memorabilia, which is never going to be popular. But does that indicate that he acted in his job as a racist police officer, since we've mentioned his name? And I feel like giving him the benefit of the doubt. What did he do as a cop that could be described as racist?
Well, what did he get in trouble for? He was posting Nazi memorabilia pictures on public trees in the forest. That can't be okay.
Isn't that free? Hold on. Isn't that free speech?
I don't know. Is it? Or is it
well,
hate speech?
I think
if you're celebrating people that committed genocide in any way, isn't that hate speech?
Well, I guess, Mr. Marquez, anybody who's fascinated with history would maybe fascinated with eras of time. I mean, I read the Bible all the time, and the Bible is full of slavery. It's full of mistreatment of people. It's full of people who got, including some of Jesus' disciples, who got disemboweled because of their beliefs. And in America, we say, you're allowed to engage in whatever speech you want as long, and now you may be unpopular in certain quarters if you engage in free speech that's ugly. But isn't that what the First Amendment was written to protect, saying the government can't stop your speech merely because it's ugly? The government can only stop your speech if it presents a danger.
Lars, I'm not the government.
No, but the First Amendment.
I'm a private citizen.
Right.
Right? And so while, yes, you do have the right to say whatever you want, there are also consequences to your actions and to your speech.
Consequences including physical attacks on police officers by Antifa members?
I've never seen anybody attack a police officer.
No,
they have weapons.
They have weapons. Antifa used lasers to blind police officers. They used explosives, and I assume the explosives were not to celebrate, but to threaten harm, and in some cases did harm cops. So can we agree that Antifa did engage in activities that sent people to the hospital?
I can't agree with that. What I can agree, can we agree that the police shot me, a nonviolent protester, in the head that's on an international documentary?
They shot a smoke device and the shell hit you in the head. And that was that the intended, because the police, as you point out, have plenty of weapons. If they had intended to shoot people, there would have been hundreds of dead bodies in the streets. Was your shooting intentional or accidental because of a riot that was going on at the time?
I believe that all protesters that were harmed by the police during the COVID uprisings were intentional.
That they intentionally harmed you and without legal cause?
I believe so, yes.
I mean, because I've never been arrested by the police, but if I were arrested and I fought the arrest, I resisted the arrest, I might expect to get injured, because anybody who has a physical dispute with somebody. But how should the police a mob when they occupy downtown Portland, in this case, for more than 100 days? They have nightly riots that present a danger to the general public and actually ended the life of one man, Aaron Danielson, who was shot in the head by an Antifa believer and killed. How should the police respond to that kind of situation?
I think that Aaron Donaldson was violent, and I think what happened to him while tragic is what happens when someone defends themselves.
No, hold on. Okay? There was video of Aaron Danielson walking down the street with a friend as an Antifa member pops out from hiding and shoots him in the head. What was he doing that was being violent?
I wasn't there.
I was curious about it, and you speak as an action. Yeah, but you were speaking as though you're knowledgeable about it. The video's been out there of him being shot in the head when he was doing nothing at all. So when you say he was being, you're the one who said that he was being violent. Where do you see any evidence that he was being violent that justified getting a bullet to the head?
I believe that the person who shot him did it in self-defense. I believe his own words. He did give an interview before he was summarily murdered by the federal police. Without trial.
Well, they were trying to take him into custody. Let me go back to the policing question because it relates to the man who was shot to death by federal marshals. How should the police a mob that is presenting a danger by rioting in a downtown anywhere in America? How should they stop that?
Okay, so let me ask you, were you at any of the actions? Did you go down there? Did you witness anything down there?
Other than video, no, I didn't, because frankly, I didn't need to. I could see video every night posted by both Antifa and the people on one side and posted by the news and posted by the police. So I think I had a pretty good view. Would it have changed if I'd been standing there in person?
I think you would have noticed some different things there. I honestly do. I think that you would have noticed that every night the protests were in fact peaceful, and they were pushed by and escalated by the police. In fact, when I was down there with a documentary crew for Vice, the gentleman who was giving the interview, I forget his name, even said the same thing, that this was a peaceful protest until the police escalated things.
If the police tell the mob to clear the streets, they have the legal authority to do that. They've been given that under the law. Should they not have the authority
to
clear a riot?
Under the law, I have the right to freedom of assembly, do I not?
Yes, and the minute your assembly becomes the definition of riot and it's defined in the law, should the police have the authority to clear the street?
I can't speak on that. What I can speak on is that the police declared peaceful protest riots. I saw literally nothing going on.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation in a moment. I'm talking to Luis Marquez, a member of Antifa. His book is called Anti-Fascist, a memoir of the public of Portland Uprising, 2016 to 2020. We'll be back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls a bit later at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Control explained.
Want to stop drunk drivers from killing sober drivers? Ban sober drivers. That's how gun control works.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and emails a bit later, but I'm talking to Luis Marquez. He's the author most recently of Anti-Fascist, a memoir of the Portland Uprising 2016 to 2020. Did activists during those 100 nights of riots attempt to set a $300 million federal courthouse on fire or not?
The courthouse, I didn't see the courthouse get on fire, no.
The Mark O. Hatfield Federal Courthouse was then boarded up because you attempted to set it on fire. There were also attempts to either invade or to set on fire the Portland Police Bureau in the Justice Center building. And is it okay if I'm unhappy with police procedures or with laws in a city, is it okay for me to physically attack the police as your group did? And again, I remember you're the one innocent guy in the crowd who never did any of this. But is it okay for Antifa to physically assault police officers because they disagree with laws passed by the representatives of the rest of the people? And by the way, your little crowd down there was several thousand people on some nights, but you're in a city of 800,000 people. Do a couple of thousand people, because they join a mob in the streets, overrule the wishes of 800,000 people who live in a town?
I think this town has a lot of problems.
Okay.
I think this town is tired of a brutal police force that has really nothing to do with Portland except to brutalize us and to murder innocent young men in the streets.
Can you name the innocent young man who's been murdered in the streets of Portland?
Quanice Hayes.
Quanice Hayes.
You laugh. Why you laugh?
Well, tell my audience your take on Quanice Hayes, and I'll give you mine.
Quanice Hayes was a young man who was out doing something that he shouldn't have been doing, ran from the police.
Had been armed. Don't forget, he wasn't armed when he was shot, but he had been armed previously, wasn't he?
It was a toy gun.
It doesn't matter. If I rob a liquor store with a toy gun, it's still armed robbery under the law, and for good reason.
It was a toy gun. Did he have this gun on him when he was shot? No. There was no reason for the police to murder that young man, to shoot him in the back. It was cowardly.
Actually, I think he was shot in the head, if I remember correctly, because he was on hands and knees and reached for his waistband, which is where people conceal guns. And I know you're not familiar with that because you never get involved in that kind of thing.
He was on what happened to Jeremy Christensen, someone who had just murdered two people and stabbed a third. How did the police take him into custody?
Actually, I don't remember that right offhand, but
my point is, for a man who's seen video, haven't seen that video?
Do I have it all committed to memory, Louise? My head is not that big. All I'm asking you is, do the police have a right to enforce the law? And if they're dealing with dangerous people who have been armed, who have presented a threat.
Sir, let's go back to the conversation we were just having, and then I'll get to that, okay?
Okay, go for it.
So, you do not know how he was arrested, right? That's what you're telling me. You do not know how Jeremy Christian was arrested.
We've talked about his case before, but I just don't have it fresh to memory. No.
He was allowed to finish a beer and smoke a cigarette before he was taken into custody. Okay? They didn't shoot him. They let him finish a beer, smoke a cigarette, and then arrest him.
And what's your theory about why the police treated Jeremy Christian so much differently? He was the guy who murdered two men on a MAX train.
And stabbed a third.
Yes, I understand. He's a bad guy.
Well, you didn't mention that he there was a third victim, and he was harassing two young girls.
And we're not just scoring points here. What's your point?
Okay, so I believe that the Portland police are a racist police force. I believe that racism is inherent in the Portland Police Bureau. Okay, and I think that is why that they murdered a 17-year-old boy and let a 30-plus-year-old murderer finish a beer and have a cigarette before they arrested him.
Because Jeremy Christian was crazy and white, and Quanice Hayes was black. That's your logic.
I believe that there's an inherent racism in the Portland Police Bureau, and this has been proven. There are many podcasts that talk about the history of the
Yeah, there are lots of podcasts that say that all kinds of crazy things, but Luis, that doesn't mean they're right. It just means that anybody can say anything they want on a podcast, and apparently mobs can take over the streets if they choose to. Luis, I've got to wrap this up because I do have other things to do, but I invite you back, and in fact, I'll probably call on you when there's new Antifa violence. Can you tell me this? In the next couple of months going up to the 2024 election, do you think Antifa is going to come back to the streets of American cities?
Sure. Anti-fascists have been here for 60-plus years and have never gone away. Okay? Anti-fascists are doing the work needed. If you don't see them, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. I think that the next few months are going to be a dangerous time for all of us. I think we live in crazy times that things change daily, and none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. That we can only wish the best for all of us.
That's kind of a generic comment, but I find myself agreeing with you. I think it's going to be very dangerous. Unfortunately, I think Antifa is going to pose one of those dangers. But Luis Enrique Marquez is the author of Anti-Fascist, a memoir of the Portland Uprising, 2016 to 2020. Luis, it's a pleasure to have you on the program, and we will have you back.
Thank you, sir. You do
betcha.
Well.
and you as well. God bless. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. We'll be back in a moment. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you are listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, it's political season, but the Democrats seem to have a little bit of a problem when it comes to debates. I mean, after all, Donald Trump has arranged three debates that he has offered to do, and he's challenged Kamala Harris to show up and debate him. She has agreed to one of them. She may or may not agree to the other two. And then you've got Janelle Bynum, who is in Oregon, and she's running for Congress. And Lori Chavez de Remer, the incumbent, has said, hey, let's have a debate. You've got a lot of things to answer for, but Bynum is kind of hiding in the basement. So there seems to be a problem that Republicans are almost always willing to debate, but when the Democrats are asked, they get a little bit on the shy side. And that's a problem I thought I'd put to Joe Kent. Joe Kent, retired Special Forces warrant officer, the Gold Star husband of fallen Navy senior chief Shannon Kent, who was murdered by ISIS, running for Washington's 3rd Congressional District. And when I did the math the other day, because Leslie Llewellyn ran a race against Joe Kent, but she lost, and she immediately stepped up and endorsed him and said she would endorse him and campaign for him. When you add Joe's numbers to Leslie Llewellyn's numbers, it's about 51%. And Marie Perez, the incumbent, came nowhere near, well, she came close to that, but not, she was below that number. So it seems like it's Joe Kent's race to lose rather than Marie Perez's race to win. So, Joe, I want to ask you this. You've set up and agreed to a debate. Is that correct?
Yep, we have a debate coming up here on October 7th. It'll be on KATU. So excited to hold Marie Perez accountable for her horrible votes she's taken while she's been in Congress supporting Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's destructive agenda.
Now, is Perez going to show up?
She says she'll be there.
She says she'll be there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, last time we had a hard time getting her to debate without notes or her phone. So this time we've had the stipulation that she can't look at notes. She can't, have her phone out there texting with people. So we're looking forward to seeing how she does, just having to defend her record, just really off the top of her head and speaking from the heart.
Well, you saw how Joe Biden did without notes and a phone. Didn't work out so well for him, did it?
It sure didn't. And this just really speaks to how little the Democrats have to run on, whether it's Kamala Harris or whether it's Marie Perez. These guys have to kind of hide or rely on millions of dollars getting pumped into the district with ads and, deceptive mailers, because they've got nothing to run on. They opened the border up. They drove all of the inflation. They've got us on the brink of World War III. I mean, the list goes on. So they have to go on defense mode. We can really go on offense. We're exposing their records and we're articulating our vision for the future.
By the way, Joe, I know it costs money, so tell people where to find you on social media and help you out either with their own individual efforts or with their donations.
Yeah, please go to JoeKentForCongress.com. Any donation is very helpful. And if you can help me expose Marie Perez's record, go to MarieWatch.com and send that out to your friends in the 3rd District.
Absolutely right. Well, tell me this. How is she going to answer this concern about the border? Because, Joe, it gets worse and worse. I started today by mentioning to people that we not only have a problem of people illegally crossing the border, but the FBI and Homeland Security let a guy run around the country for several months with their permission, even though he was on the terrorist watch list, even though he had recently traveled to Iran, and now he's sitting under federal indictment in custody, accused of plotting the assassination of Donald Trump and a number of other U.S. officials, backed up by Iran. And yet they knowingly let him into the country, knowing that his background said, watch out for this guy. And how in the world can she defend that kind of record?
Yeah, and these are just the ones that we know of. I mean, if you've been down to the border like I have, and I know Perez hasn't been down there, you can see it's wide open. There's people streaming into our nation. Now, there's been millions of folks that have come into our country illegally, and so we only know of the few folks that we've actually been able to identify that are associated with terrorist networks, but I'm concerned about the ones that we don't know. I mean, the attacks of September 11th were conducted by, you know, 20 guys and some box cutters, and now we've had millions of people come into our country. We have no idea who they are, in addition to the fentanyl that we know is killing people here in our district in Southwest Washington and throughout the nation. And Perez voted for that. So she's going to try and do some misdirection and say, well, there's another bipartisan bill that I sponsored that actually allocated no money whatsoever for the border. It was really just dressed up to get foreign aid approved. So she's going to try misdirections, and that's why we're really trying to just highlight what her actual record is on MarieWatch.com. And she's got no plan to actually secure the border. The Democrats don't. They want the border to be open. If they wanted the border to be closed, it would have been closed 3 years ago.
Well, it's funny because, Joe, I get calls from people. One called me earlier this week, and he said, well, the Democrat, there was a bipartisan effort to close the border. And I said, no, there wasn't. I said, there was a bill out of the Senate written by Lankford. I don't know why a Republican would sell out that way. And it said, you're okay up to 5,000 illegal crossings a day, but after that, we'll put a limit on it. So it actually institutionalized the idea that 5,000 a day will cross illegally, and it's only a problem above that. But the Democrats throw this out and say, why, you could have voted for that. I said, no, you had H.R. 1 on the House side. I can't remember whether Perez was there when that vote was cast, but the House passed a really good, solid border bill, and then the Senate just refused to even take it up, even though it was a solid bill. She could have got behind an effort like that, and I can guarantee her voting record does not say she did.
That's exactly right. One of the first votes that Marie Perez took was against H.R. 2, and that would have shut down the border. Yeah, mandatory E-Verify. It would have built the wall. It would have stopped this invasion. She voted against that. All the two other bills that the Democrats have proposed, and they're kind of bipartisan, they basically just codify the current invasion into law. They're doing that trick where they say, like, the illegal immigrants are no longer illegal, therefore we fixed illegal immigration. I mean, it's really counting on people not to read the bill. So we encourage folks to get out there and really read the bill. That's why MarieWatch.com is so important, because the Democrats really rely on sound bites and just flooding the media with just blatant lies.
Isn't that funny how they solve a problem like that? Like Oregon says, we didn't have people die of illegal drugs. We made those drugs legal, and then the people died from them. So problem solved. You know, they didn't die from illegal drugs. They died from legal drugs. I will tell you this, because I know you know this, but I want my audience to know this. What you don't see behind the scenes on this show, I call Joe Kent. Joe's generally willing to come on the show anytime. We also contact Marie Perez, and we've done it over and over, and we continue to do it so that nobody can say we did not invite her to come on. And you know that if we had her on, I'd be very polite, very civil. I would not be mean to her, but she won't come on and answer questions for anything.
No, not at all. I mean, and look, this is obviously a more right-leaning show. I go on your show, but I also do a lot of media with relatively hostile media, people that claim to be, you know, fair and neutral and all that. But I'm on all the major networks throughout the district, giving them the opportunity to ask me hard questions and having to defend my record and my views. Marie does not do that. The Democrats, they can't do that. They are relying on the millions of dollars to just kind of carpet bomb the airways with their 30 seconds of kind of like lies and misdirection plays. So these people can't have open and honest discussions or debates. But I'm really looking forward to this debate, because I think we're going to get a great opportunity to make her defend her record and then really be able to articulate my vision for getting our country back on track.
That is Joe Kennedy's running for the 3rd Congressional District in Washington State. And we will invite Marie Perez one more time. Say, member of Congress, come on the program, answer a few tough questions, not the kind of softballs you get from the legacy media. That's Joe Kent. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarsen.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. With those hot...
I know y'all think it takes balls to be singing what I'm singing, but I'm just singing what you're thinking.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails on a First Amendment Friday, especially at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Now, Kamala Harris loves to brag about how she was Attorney General of California, and she's a law and order type, except a lot of what she did as Attorney General was positively evil. I mean, hiding information that would have exonerated a man, putting literally a couple of thousand people in jail or at least under criminal indictment because of marijuana, which even though I don't use it and I don't like it, it's legal in a number of places. And then she laughed when reporters said, well, don't you smoke weed? And she just laughed about that. But here's one of the most shameful things she did, and then I'll get to your phone calls. While serving as California's Attorney General in 2016, Kamala Harris sent 11 California Department of Justice agents to raid the home of a journalist and a pro-life activist known as David Daladin. And we've talked about his case before. And why did they do that? Well, the Federalist tells the story. Harris's office seized Daladin's camera equipment and his hard drives containing undercover videos that exposed Planned Parenthood and their trafficking of the body parts of aborted babies. I know it's ugly, but it happened. And that's all that David Daladin was trying to do, was say these people are out negotiating over how much you should pay for body parts from aborted babies, and Planned Parenthood was doing it. Well, yeah, at the time, they reported these 15 felony counts brought against Daladin. This was a Kamala Harris special, because while she wasn't going after some more conventional criminals, she was going after anybody who was a pro-life journalist that was going to out one of the biggest abortion providers in the world, and the biggest one in America, and that's Planned Parenthood. So that's the kind of stuff that she was up to. And they went after her, after Dave Daladin. It was a hit job on a pro-life journalist who just wanted to expose what was going on. And if you say, well, hidden cameras, who uses those? Just about every news organization in the business does that. Well, guess what's happened now? They sealed up the footage, even though it was seized by the government. And it should have been, as a court record, it should have been public. It has been sealed and unseen until now. And the latest videos, according to the Federalist, include alleged admissions from Planned Parenthood employees about their financial motives for selling these baby parts from abortions. And he documented this so well. In fact, in one of them, a woman says, you told me about the proposition, so now every time do a dilation and evacuation abortion, I'm like, oh, there's some lungs, there's some kidneys. And they describe getting the parts that were being ordered up in these illicit deals. It should have been a much bigger deal. It was not. Most of the mainstream media is pro-abortion, and they don't want to talk. They don't want to touch this stuff. But that is one of the things. From 2010 to 2015, Planned Parenthood and its board members and abortion groups donated $81,000 to Kamala Harris's political campaigns. While she was running for Senate in 2016, her campaign website featured a petition asking visitors to sign in support of preventing Planned Parenthood from being defunded. And if you say, well, hold on, are the taxpayers funding Planned Parenthood? Oh, yeah, they are. A lot of money every single year. You say, well, it's against the law to use taxpayer dollars under the Hyde Amendment to fund abortions. And you say, oh, but that's where they try the tricky language. Money is fungible, which means when the Congress gives money to Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood says, we're only taking this money for all of our other non-abortion activities. And if you know anything about Planned Parenthood, you'd laugh about that. To your calls on this First Amendment Friday, let's start with Bob. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
You were talking about the second or the terrorist that could have possibly made an attempt on President Trump's life. And then
yep.
I want to bring up the ineptness of our Secret Service, FBI, with this first attempt. But yet Tulsi Gabbard, a real terrorist like that, is on the watch list and being watched and monitored by the Biden administration. We're quickly turning into a banana republic.
We are, because, and Bob, I don't know, have you seen the extent to which they've been going after Tulsi Gabbard? Tulsi Gabbard now has federal agents Every time she flies on an airplane, she is followed on that airplane by federal agents. And I'm not exaggerating that, not one little bit. You say, well, why are they following her? Well, it's because of these, what is it called, Open Skies or Blue Skies program. And they said, we have to follow her around because she's somehow a threat to America. It's that kind of craziness, and I appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Todd. Hey, Todd, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Oh, hey, Lars. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Appreciate all you do. And, you know, you might not like this, but I feel like politics, you're missing the point.
Okay.
You know, politics divides people. And if you want categories, I'll try to make it simple.
Okay.
You can divide all people into two categories. You got the people who are profiting from inflation, and you got the people who are getting poorer from inflation. You can draw a line, and you're either getting wealthier or you're getting poorer from inflation. And when you look at those categories, they're made up of all religions, all races, all political types. So if you look at inflation and currency, it bridges all religions, all politics. And so I'm telling you, focus on the currency. The currency is the key. And
well, of course it is. But who controls the currency? The United States government controls the currency and the Federal Reserve. Because they, and that, and to some extent the U.S. Congress, because they could print all the currency they want, but if nobody spends the money, it doesn't enter the economy. But if the U.S. Congress under the Democrats, and this is where it is a partisan issue, if the Democrats say we've got to have the Inflation Reduction Act and flush hundreds of billions at the end of the day, about $2 trillion since the beginning of the Biden administration, about $2 trillion flushed in for Green New Deal, for Inflation Reduction Act, all these other things. When you flush all that currency into the economy, when Joe Biden and his friends say, we're going to pay off student loans or forgive the student loans, you're pushing money into the economy, which is one of the things that causes inflation.
Correct, yes. The whole thing is a bigger, I hate to use the word scam, but it's a bigger scam than people can understand. Like,
well, we talk about it almost daily, Todd. I mean, it's not that we're focused on anything else, but there are a lot of things to talk about. And I'm with you. I don't think political parties divide people. I think what happens is politicians divide people by saying, you're black, you need to vote Democrat. You're white, we assume you're a racist, and you're going to vote Republican. Well, neither of those assumptions is valid. But when people are divided up based on race, based on age, based on skin color, based on faith or anything else, the only people who benefit from that division are politicians. And you're right, there is some benefit to both sides, but the Democrats play it to the hilt. They say, we are going to go after people and say, I mean, Tim Walz, for example, governor of Minnesota, created a program to help people who were farmers, but he said it's only open to people of color. It is not at all. If you're white, you need not apply. And if you understand, show me a Republican who did something like that. The Democrats do it all day long. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. He may talk about serious issues, but even Lars has a sense of humor.
I have a joke for you. The government in this town is excellent and uses your tax dollars efficiently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on First Amendment Friday. On First Amendment Fridays, we open up the phone lines and every single subject is fair game. So it's a great pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who's both a medical doctor, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, that little spot of red in the middle of the big blue Stanford campus, although he's also a professor at Stanford University Medical Center. And Dr. Bhattacharya, it's a pleasure to have you back.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Now, having had your own personal experience with censorship and attempts of the institution where you work to try to shut you down during the COVID pandemic, and you said some courageous things in my book, now you're concerned about what America's up to with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz as the Democrat nominees running on that side of the aisle.
Well, I saw some clips from Governor Walz, where he indicated that he was gung-ho on this idea of using misinformation as an excuse to censor Americans. And I can tell you, as having been on the sharp end of that, where the federal government used its power to try to censor and suppress my ideas on social media and elsewhere, I think it violates not just the spirit of a free speech that the United States should adhere to, like, at all times, but, like, directly threatens the ability for science and policy to actually have rational discussions about science and policy. I don't understand how a vice presidential candidate can still so openly embrace these kinds of policies that were so damaging during the pandemic.
I guess the short answer, Doc, and I don't agree with it, but the short answer seems to be, they know everything. They know what's right. We're all wrong, and they're happy to tell us so. And when they tell us and we don't correct what we're saying to their point of view or their facts and information, then they say, well, then we'll just silence you altogether. That's a scary prospect in a country with a First Amendment.
It really is, especially when you think it in the context of science. That kind of hubris has absolutely no place in science. In fact, it's dangerous because science works by allowing people to contradict established ideas. And if you bring data, you can change minds. Probably the worst example of this during the pandemic is Tony Fauci, who told an interviewer that if you criticize me, you're not simply criticizing a man, you're criticizing science itself. I mean, think about that. But that hubris, when it's backed by the government power to censor, essentially means that we cannot have reasoned discussions. And in fact, that's a large part of what happened during the pandemic. It's why the destructive policies that so many states followed, closing schools and so on, lasted for so long. The vaccine mandates, they lasted so long because we couldn't have reasoned opposition to it, have the same level playing field that an environment free speech would have given it.
Well, remember, this is the guy, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, who came out with not only a bunch of lockdown rules for his state during the pandemic, but he also set up a snitch line so that neighbors could be encouraged to say, hey, my neighbor's violating the lockdown rules, and that they could snitch off their friends and neighbors.
It's hard to think of something more fundamentally un-American, but that's exactly what happened. Actually, it didn't just happen in Walz's Minnesota. It also happened in California, in the county where I live. There was a snitch line of a very similar sort. The idea that we should treat our neighbors as biohazards and that we should seek to have the full force of the law apply to them if they don't behave exactly the way we want them to behave, well, that's not the kind of thing that I think Americans normally would agree to. And to say, okay, we should reward Tim Walz for implementing such policies and not hold him to account by saying, look, you really made a mistake. The very least you should expect him to say, I'm sorry, we shouldn't have done that. We violated your rights at scale. Instead, he seems to be doubling down on these kinds of ideas, and it's just shocking.
Well, in fact, I'm talking to Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. You find his work at the Hoover Institution on the Stanford campus, and also he's a professor at Stanford Medical School. But doctor, in the years I've been in the news business, it's routine that every time there's some major disaster, natural or otherwise, there are countless reviews afterwards saying what went wrong, why did it go wrong, what did we need to do differently. And yet, after the pandemic, at least as far as the lockdowns were done, and I know a lot of them blamed this on the federal government, but almost all the lockdowns were imposed by the states. Now they could say, well, we were just taking the advice of the CDC, but it was only CDC. But I didn't see much of a rear window view to say, well, what exactly did we do? Was it the right thing to do? Was it the wrong thing to do? And what should we have done differently? Because I don't think they wanted to give that up. I think they anticipate it's going to happen again, and we'll probably have to lock the place down again. So why go back and suggest that lockdowns were a bad idea? I think that's the thinking behind this.
In 2022, I wrote a roadmap for how to conduct exactly such an inquiry, something we call the Norfolk Group document.
Yep.
If you can go to norfolkgroup.org, you can look at it. It's just a list of questions that a honest COVID inquiry would ask. It's exactly along the lines you're suggesting. It's still shocking to me that we have not had that. I think I've had a couple of ideas. I think your idea for why we haven't had that is certainly true. I think the lockdown template is now the standard template. You know, if the folks who are listening to this, if you don't expect there won't be another pandemic. There will very likely will be at some point in the future. And when there's a pandemic, your businesses will close, your churches, mosques, and synagogues will close, your children at schools will close. All of that will happen again, because that is now the standard template, because we did not have such an honest COVID inquiry. We've had a partisan sort of like approach. I think the Republicans actually have done better, I think, generally at this, but it really, we don't need a partisan kind of evaluation. What we need is an honest inquiry as to, okay, what went wrong, what went right, and then reform so that what went wrong doesn't happen again. It's like as if a plane had crashed, you'd look at the black box, and the goal isn't to like point fingers, it's to make sure that we have policy so that future planes don't crash. That's the right spirit for this.
Well, I agree. And, Doctor, there's another element that's missing. It's kind of outside of your lane, but it's in my lane. It used to be that if somebody said, we're going to shut down speech, there was the ACLU, which famously defended Nazis marching through Skokie, and there were all the press who said, this may not be our fight directly, but indirectly, if you threaten to, you know, to quell information, that's our business. And they would go to court. They would editorially approach it and say, you can't do this kind of stuff. And yet, both of those elements, both the private groups like ACLU and the Fourth Estate, have just taken a pass on this one and said they're actually in favor of it, it seems.
That has shocked me, too, especially the press. I can almost understand the press, right? They view social media as a competitor that's destroying their business model. And so they're perfectly happy to have the government push social media to censor things, because it sort of hobbles the ability for people on social media to get, to have like free ideas flow when the government does that, as it did during the pandemic. ACLU it really did fail to stand up to it, what I would have thought of as its founding principles of protection of free speech. But the good news, though, is there are other civil rights organizations that have stood up. For instance, there's a group called the New Civil Liberties Alliance, the NCLA, that's represented me on a free speech case called Missouri versus Biden that went actually all the way up to the Supreme Court. And we have got a lot of great results in the lower courts that essentially told the Biden administration they were not allowed to go tell social media who and what to censor. The Supreme Court, unfortunately, was quite disappointing. They concluded that I and the other plaintiffs in the case did not have standing to sue, although they didn't say that the Biden administration had the right still to go suppress speech.
You just didn't have a right to go into court and contest it. Dr. Bhattacharya, I hope you've got that book on the way. I'm anticipating it, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Alison. Nice to talk with you.
It is always my pleasure. That's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, professor at Stanford Medical School. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. Jamie Markley here.
Ever wonder what a vegan actually is?
They say cows are bad for the environment because all they do is eat plants and fart, just like vegans.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our X-Poll question today. Do you find the term ladies and gentlemen offensive? I don't, so I vote no on it. You can vote any way you like. Delta Airlines and their top DEI officer has now banned gate announcements at airports. That's when they tell you the plane's going to be late or the plane's going to be boarding in a half an hour, that kind of stuff. They would address people as ladies and gentlemen. He doesn't believe, or they, I guess, shouldn't. They doesn't believe, and it is grammatically correct, they doesn't believe that the phrase ladies and gentlemen is not inclusive enough. So they don't like it. Apparently Delta is going to do away with referring to people as ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if they're going to say, hey, you or what, but you can find the X poll on X at Lars Larson Show and on our website at LarsLarson.com. And always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's start with Jason, who's listening on the Radio Northwest Network and wants to talk about the great Minnesota governor and Command Sergeant Major Tim Walz. How you doing, Jason?
Good, Lars. All right. I'm doing good today. Tim Walz, I guess we can call him AWOL Tim Walz.
AWOL Tim Walz, or Tampon Tim, because that's become popular since he forced the legislature to fund tampons for boys' bathrooms down to age 4. God knows what they're going to do with them.
That is so gross. That is just, let me get the bottom line. That is just completely gross. But anyways, he was in the military, he was an artillery person, a mortar person. That would put him behind enemy lines to begin with. He really chickened out by not going to Iraq. Now, he wouldn't have been on the front lines with a rifle, so to say. Anybody that was in the military knows what a mortar or artillery piece is. That would not have put him on the front lines. He's really chickening out here.
Well, and here's the thing, Jason. All of us who have not served, and that includes me, need to be careful when we talk about vets. But I've been telling people all this week, Walz was chosen by Kamala Harris. She announces this to great fanfare. And we said, well, hold on. He claims to be a command sergeant major, but he didn't hold that rank when he retired. Why not? And the answer is, he decided to quit before his commitment was up. He claims it was 4 years. The records show it was 6. But in any case, he quit at about 3.5 years. The chaplain of his National Guard battalion calls Tim Walz cowardly. Now, when the chaplain is calling you cowardly, and here's the quote I thought summed it up best. In our world, meaning the National Guard, to drop out after a warnord, I'd never seen that term before, but warnord is a warning order, meaning when they're about to activate your unit, they send you a warnord message that says, we're activating you, you're going to be deploying to X, Y, or Z in so many weeks or so many months, and they tell you it's coming. He dropped out of the National Guard right after his unit was notified they were going to be deployed to Iraq, and he left his unit without a senior NCO.
Yeah, they're really trying to swift vote this guy in there. I mean, a Joe Biden endorsement can't really mean much anyways. We really need to tell this guy to pound sand.
Well, the only question is Kamala Harris going to stick with him, or would she do something completely out of the norm and say, I'm going to dump this VP and pick somebody else?
Well, she can't really. It's a little late now. She's already got the swift boat going. She's got the momentum.
Well, but she isn't doing the swift boating. The swift boat reference is to the swift boat Veterans for Truth, who pointed out that John Kerry had a very sketch military career and they didn't think much of him. So the swift boaters were the ones pointing out the truth about the guy. But Jason, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Tim in Enumclaw. Hey, Tim, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to thank you for being one of the few conservative people out there talking about abortion. It feels like a lot of people have given up on the subject.
No, it's a big issue. It's a big issue.
Between, I think so as well, but a lot of people, I don't want to say surrendered, but they kind of given up. Anyways, how do you feel about the comparison between abortion and slavery? All the similarities of a people group that have no representation, that are treated poorly or killed, and that people treat as property or not as people. Isn't that very similar to the slavery issue?
Yeah, it's very similar because the United States up through, what decision was it? Anyway, up through had defined slaves as not human beings, as not people, as non-voters, non-citizens, etc. And you say, well, what about the baby? Well, you're treated as though you have no value, and the only value you may have is selling your parts, which apparently there was a healthy trade, unhealthy trade, by Planned Parenthood in selling baby parts. So I think the comparison is kind of apt.
Like a good way to break through to
I would say moderates or people who maybe might be open to hearing, having their minds changed, because that kind of opens your eyes to, you know, people on the left often bring up slavery and reparations as like this big issue for them. So it seems like a way to get through to them.
I think that's a fantastic idea, Tim. Just simply say, well, if you didn't believe in slavery and declaring people non-persons without rights and only rights for their commercial value, you've done the same thing to unborn babies, and you're right.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, where for the last 25 years or so, we've endeavored to serve the people of the Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. And I want to talk about one of the dirty little secrets about government is that no matter how much money a government agency has in the bank, it will always ask for more. And what we should do as citizens is say, if you've already got that money and you're not putting it to good use, then we're not going to give you any more. And if you come for more, you better justify what you want to spend it on and why you're asking for it. That would be my approach. And I suspect it may be similar to the approach of John Lee, retired airline pilot, reporter, and candidate for the Washington House of Reps, District 18, Position 2. John, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, happy Friday. Always happy to be on with you and your listeners.
What'd you think about the results of Tuesday's primary?
I was ecstatic with it. Basically, I got three times the number of votes of my Republican opponent. I was delighted overall in Washington State, and for our Clark County Republican Party endorsed candidates, we did very well. So we're looking forward to going forward to November and hopefully having an awful lot of wins in November, of course, including President Donald Trump.
Yeah, President Donald Trump, Governor Dave Reichert, I'd like to see Congressman Joe Kent, I'd like to see State Rep John Lee. So tell my audience what they ought to know, not just about what TriMet, the big transit agency for Portland, is doing, burning through $1 billion in the next decade, but what C-Tran is doing at the same time.
So C-Tran recently released their annual report. I went through it, and then I decided to do a comparison with TriMet. C-Tran has so much cash in the bank that they could operate for 3 years without any taxes or passenger fares, just using their cash on hand. Unbelievable.
They sound like the Harvard endowment, you know, where Harvard wouldn't even have to charge tuition, except that C-Tran is not nearly as highly ranked as Harvard is, and I don't think much of Harvard either. How do they explain having all this cash?
Well, in a sense, they don't, other than when you dig into the details, both transit agencies at C-Tran in Clark County and TriMet in Portland have received a ton of cash from the federal government during the pandemic, and both federal and state governments for various boondoggle projects over the years. And C-Tran has used that cash to add to their balance sheet. A decade ago, they had $119 million in assets on their books, and now they've got $423 million. And it's like, how can you do that when your passenger fares only cover 5 to 15% of your operating costs? It's unbelievable, and yet they've been able to add to the balance sheet, and they've got so much that they can keep running empty buses for a long, long time without needing any more taxpayer subsidies.
See, and I wish at least an agency like that would start to say, hold on, we've got all this extra cash. I'm not saying reduce fares, because I know they might be inclined to do that, because I want to see the people who ride the buses pay a greater percentage. When you've got, you know, skin in the game, you tend to care about the kind of service you get. When you're not paying anything, you do not. And I know people who say, well, no, the bus is already too expensive. It's already too expensive, and you're not even paying 85% of the cost of operating it and zero of the cost of buying the buses themselves. Is anybody on their board of directors questioning why they're holding four-tenths of $1 billion?
Absolutely not. In fact, they love to tout it. C-Tran has won awards from the federal government for being one of the best operated transit agencies in the nation. And so they love to brag about the fact that their financial balance sheet is so healthy. But the honest answer to that is they're getting it by that healthy balance sheet because they're picking people's pockets from both the state and federal level instead of more wisely using the buses. And the saddest part is that ridership is down. As you and I have talked about many, many times, comparing ridership before the pandemic, it's down 30 to 50% at both agencies. And when you go back and look a decade or more ago, ridership is down 50% or more. And
wow.
Common sense people want to use their cars. And therefore, a delightful article by the Washington Policy Center's Charles Pressgrove recently labeled the death spiral in transit agencies nationwide. People are refusing to use mass transit for their mode of transportation.
And by the way, let me throw another element into that. They're refusing to use transit, which means in most cases they're opting for a car or a truck of their own. And the direct day-to-day cost of buying fuel is about 40% higher than it was 3 years ago. So even with much higher fuel costs, people are still saying, I ain't taking the bus.
Yeah, exactly right. And in fact, Pressgrove noted that in spite of higher costs, not only for people choosing to use their cars, but that at these transit agencies, their productivity is down. We're paying more than ever on a per passenger carried basis, and yet the number of people they're carrying is going down. In the state of Washington, the cost has gone from $2.1 billion in 2012 to $5.2 billion in 2022 for all of our transit agencies. And yet the number of people they carry on an hourly basis was 31 passengers per hour a wow. decade ago, and it's now just below 16 passengers an hour. Absolutely ridiculous to carry so few people for such an outrageous cost.
Well, and by the way, John, one of the things I'd love to have you put to rest, we've mentioned it before, but I'd love you to put some numbers together. There's this old meme that says, well, old, dirty, stinky, you know, buses are better because they carry a lot of people and the amount of pollution they put out and the amount of fuel they burn, except they're not taking into account modern automobiles that are as efficient as they've ever been in American history, and they are as low in pollution as they've ever been in American history. Even when you compare it that way, the transit agencies are usually not superior to, if you calculate it as passengers carried per pound of pollution. You know, you'd say, oh, no, transit's much better on pollution and fuel use. I don't think that's true anymore because of the efficiency of modern automobiles. The transit agencies don't beat the average private car. So as far as I'm concerned, ditch the whole system, and if you have to, subsidize Uber and Lyft for those people who actually need to get somewhere and rebuild a system that way and spend a lot less.
That's exactly right, buddy. And the easy example to that is that Washington State has eliminated their vehicle emission testing because cars are so clean. You know, they no longer do that, number one. And your focus on Uber and Lyft is exactly right. We could subsidize those people who truly need and want point-to-point service by just giving them a public-funded transit card, i.e., here. Call.
I don't like the subsidies, but if we have to subsidize anything, let's do it the most efficient way. That's John Lee. He's running for the Washington House of Reps. He'll be on the ballot in November, District 18, Position 2, and I voted for him.
At least someone has a plan for illegal aliens.
Back in the White House, I will terminate every open borders policy of the Biden administration and begin the largest deportation operation in American history.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to be with you. And we now have a court system that identifies perverts, in some cases, not often enough, convicts them of crimes, and then turns them loose where they can do it again. And I've got a great example of that, but I'll save that for after my first naysayer of the day, and that's Jason. Jason, if you listen to this show, you know how much we love naysayers. We always put them to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. So tell me what you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today.
Gotcha. I'd like to start by saying that I love your show, and I'm typically not a naysayer.
Thank you.
Genuinely agree with you on pretty much everything. I think you have great points. I feel like we're, as a country and as the right side media, not doing Trump justice necessarily right now. You spend probably 75 to 80%, at least of what I hear when you speak of the upcoming presidential election, speaking against Kamala and walls.
Or in favor of Trump. Or in favor of Trump, which I guess is fundamentally the same thing, right?
Well, that's where the naysaying is. I don't hear a whole lot of things about, I don't hear as many things for Trump and what he's going to do for us, which I'm voting for him. I think he's our best bet. But I hear way more about what
why
Kamala
not to
is going to destroy.
Can I tell you why I think that? And I like food analogies. If you see a picture of me, you know I like to eat. Do you know why I don't have to tell you about McDonald's?
Because you like Wendy's?
No, I mean, I do like Wendy's better than McDonald's. Actually, McDonald's is kind of bottom of the barrel. But no, it's because, do you think anybody in America, if you say, well, what's a McDonald's sandwich like? Is there anybody in America who couldn't already answer that question?
Of course.
Okay, everybody, even if you don't regularly eat fast food. So if you say, well, I need to tell you about Donald Trump. Well, we've spent the last, you know, we've spent all the years going back to 2015 when he first started running, 2016 when he laid, and by 2015, the fall, he'd already laid out everything he planned to do. And according to the folks who keep the lists on this, Federalist is a good one, where they keep a list of what every single presidential candidate promises. And then the winner, they keep a list of what they actually fulfilled the promise. Donald Trump fulfilled more of his stated political promises than any president in recent history. So lowered taxes, started to do what he could with the border, blocked by his own party, blocked by the Democrats, blocked by the Congress. He still got a lot done. And he brought about one of the lowest levels of illegal entry. So on all, he promised to be pro-life, he was. He promised to be pro-gun, he was. So do I really need to sell people on what he represents? Because usually when I say, well, Kamala Harris wants to block fracking, she wants to put the oil companies out of business, I guess I could add, I could tag that by saying, oh, and by the way, Donald Trump wants to do the opposite. Although occasionally I do say he wants all of the above. Natural gas, coal, nuclear, all of that stuff, and solar and wind when it makes sense. But on almost everything we talk about involving Kamala Harris, you could just add, and Donald Trump will be 180 degrees the other way. And we've seen what it was like under Trump prior to the pandemic. I thought it was great. And I think by all accounts, it was great for even all the individual political groups of people that the Democrats and sadly the Republicans like to divide people up to. Was it good for black Americans? Yeah. The Trump economy was great. How about Hispanic Americans? Yeah. How about gay Americans? Sure. How about teenage Americans? Yeah. They were doing great. How are they all doing under Biden? You know, garbage. It's gone down the toilet. So when the difference is that clear, do I need to spend a lot of time selling what Trump would do, knowing that we've already seen 4 years of him and we've seen 3.5 years of Joe?
Not necessarily. I got one question. How many of your listeners do you think, you know, would be voting for Harris to where you're trying to actually sway them?
Well,
I mean, I understand you're doing
one
a
thing
show
is,
and you get
Jason,
paid to do the show.
No, but
what are
Jason,
you trying to
I'll,
accomplish?
I'll tell you, I'll tell you how I approach the show. I don't approach the show and say, I need to sway some Trump voters. That is never my goal. What I do is I tell people my opinion. I tell people how I think things ought to be. I afford people who agree with me a chance to speak. And I famously allow people who disagree with me to speak and make their case. And then I let my audience, who I think is smart enough that I don't need to, you know, grab them by the nose and lead them down to it. I just say, here's the information. Here's where I got it. Here's the logic chain by which I went from A to B. How did you come to the conclusion that drilling for oil is a great idea? How did you come to the conclusion that sending billions to Chinese solar cell makers is a bad idea? And I tell them how I come to that conclusion. I don't need to tell them what to think. All the people on the conservative side think really, really well. I mean, the famous assessment of liberal versus conservative, if anybody asks you, well, what's the difference between liberals and conservatives? Conservatives think, and sometimes too much, and I'll explain that, and liberals feel. So if you and I were walking down the street and you were a liberal, and we both see a homeless guy addicted to drugs on the street living in his own filth, and you're a liberal and I'm a conservative, you know what the conservative does? He says, you know what? There's a great program at Salvation Army that'll get you off the drugs, get you cleaned up, find work that you can do, not make work for the government, but actual jobs. And we want to help you lift yourself out of this situation. And we realize you do need some help. You know what the liberal does? He reaches over into my pocket, pulls out my wallet, takes out whatever's in there, and hands it to the guy. It says, here, here's some help, some cash. And what do you think that drug-addicted homeless guy is going to spend the cash on?
I already know that. That's a fair assessment. My only issue, seriously, is, like, there is maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people in the entire nation that are going to vote for Kamala Harris.
I disagree. I think there are a bunch of people who out of party loyalty is one thing. Mom and dad were Democrats and so am I. Whoever they put up with a D in front of it, it could be a donkey. Because they are a donkey party, and we'll vote for them. And which is a stupid way to vote. If I could find a conservative Democrat who actually believes in small government, low taxes, national security, all the other good things, I'd say I'll vote for the Democrat, unless there's a better person from the Republican Party.
Well,
I don't vote based
this
on
more than any election in my lifetime and probably your lifetime and maybe ever, everyone that goes to the polls is voting for Trump or against Trump.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I really feel like if we want to really reach people and really try to help him get in office and make our country better is to focus on him, because nobody's voting for Kamala.
This is what I mean by thinking too much, Jason, and I'll bet this fits some of your friends. You say, hold on, I've looked at your idea, whatever the idea is, new job, new house, new business they want to start, and you say, I've looked through all the things, and logically, it doesn't work. But you're talking to somebody who's making an emotional decision. They say, but I want to start a new business. I want to own a house. And if you say, but it doesn't make sense, you're thinking, they're feeling, and that's where Republicans often get beat, because we need to appeal to people, too, to say, this not only thinks right, it feels right, too.
The Lars Larson Show. A message from Lars.
I'd like to apologize to anyone I've not offended yet. Please be patient. I'll get to you shortly.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And we haven't talked to the Motor City Madman in a time. And that is Ted Nugent, who joins me now. Virtuoso guitarist, bow hunter, Second Amendment rights advocate. And believe me, Ted, there are people out there, every time I talk to you, they love to write me and they just hate your guts. And I don't understand why. Welcome back to the program, by the way.
No, of course you understand why, because we celebrate truth, logic, and common sense, and there's some brain-dead, soulless freaks out there that truth, logic, and common sense is kryptonite to crazy people, so I couldn't be more proud to be at your side, Lars.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. Tell me about this song, and I was going to play part of it. Unfortunately, It has a few of those words the FCC doesn't like, and I don't have the money to pay the fines. Rocco and you did this song called Who Shot Trump?
Well, my son Rocco, all my sons and daughters, boy, do I have a great family or what? What great, great Americans, hardworking, funny, cocky, just unbelievably talented. And Rocco is a real musical force. And I got a man cave cuckoo's nest arsenal of democracy that is wall-to-wall guns and ammo and guitars and amplifiers. And I'm down here just having the time of my life every day. And Rock comes down. And after that horrific incident where Uncle Sam tried to kill the great Donald Trump, he was pissed off. He was moved, as all of us who consider the future of a constitutional America with a real leader like Donald Trump, and that our own government would try to assassinate him. So he expressed himself emotionally through music, and he asked his dad to play some guitar on it, and I had a couple of Birdlands that were in heat. So I unleashed the Gibson Birdlands in a father-son collaboration, and we're just celebrating that Donald Trump represents good over the U.S. government bad and ugly and evil. So it's an ongoing reality, which is why people, when I'm on with you celebrating truth, logic, and common sense, get all upset, because there's people that are allergic to truth, logic, and common sense. So Rocco thought he'd express that with music, and I'm very proud of him.
Well, I'm glad to hear it, and I like the song. I just can't play it on the air right now. But Ted Nugent is with me. For all things Nugent, you can go to tednugent.com. But, Ted, let me ask you about this, about the assassination attempt. I'm glad to hear you say it the way you did, because I was starting to feel kind of lonely. Like, I'm one of the few people out there, you're included, who are saying this was an attempt by the United States federal government under Joe Biden to shortchange the security from Donald Trump, or for Donald Trump, even as they knew there was a specific threat against him from Iran, and say, yeah, we're just going to give him light coverage from the Secret Service, who made some colossal errors that almost there seemed to be so many of them that it couldn't have happened accidentally.
Well, you know, Lars, I'm surrounded by really, really great people. My band, my crew, my family, my hunting buddies. We have our sunrise safaris, and I celebrate a campfire every weekend starting in July right up till the New Year's with great American hunting, fishing, trapping, conservation, ranching, farming, environmental families. And we all know that we don't know anybody that would not have secured that rooftop. My dumbest friends, I even have some dumb friends. They're nice. They're kind. They're fun to be around. But some of them are really dumb. Even the dumbest people I know, if you said, hey, Jimmy, the president, Donald Trump is going to be speaking in this area, how would you secure it? Well, they would have put up a fence. They would have put metal detectors. They would have had security. They would have had counter snipers. And they would have secured every rooftop in the line of sight, Lars.
Yep.
It wasn't a mistake. They did it on purpose. Everybody write that down. I've got ex-commanders of the Secret Service that have called me and said they did it on purpose. Nobody with a modicum of security training could have possibly have made that mistake. It was not a mistake. It was intentional. So all the haters, I hope you're having a tizzy fit right now, because you know I'm right.
Now, I'm talking to Ted Nugent. Ted hunts mostly with bow, I think almost exclusively. I do both bow and rifle, and I'm almost embarrassed, and I was when I said it. I said, 150 yards? That is not a hard, it'd be a hard shot with a bow, but it's almost a, you know, too easy for words kind of shot with a rifle. Everybody who's shot a rifle knows 150 yards for anybody who's done any modicum of practice, that's not hard at all. Why did they leave that spot open? It wasn't like the guy was shooting from the top of the water tower at 600 yards. That would have been a hard shot. But from the top of that roof, they left him an easy line of sight to Trump.
And everybody knew that. And the local cops alerted the Secret Service. The Secret Service ignored the alert and the warnings. This is a real tragic time. You know, you and I have known each other for a long time, Lars, and the world was pretty cluster cranked when we first communicated many years ago. But we could not have imagined the treachery, the corruption, the criminality, the communism, the tyranny that we're living right now under this snake in the White House and his snake devil Democrat gang. They tried to kill Donald Trump. Somebody write that down. Hello, everybody. My name is Ted Nugent, and the facts are irrefutable. irrefutable. Uncle Sam tried to kill Donald Trump. Case closed. If you want to debate that, call 1-800-NUMBNUT, and maybe Kamala Harris will cackle for you.
You know, she finally broke. She had gone 18 days without saying a word to reporters on the record, and she finally spent a couple of minutes today. I guess we'll have to wait another 18 days to hear her say, because I honestly want somebody to ask her some really good questions and show America the nonsensical answers that she supplies to questions.
Well, she's on record that she's against the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Ten Commandments, the Golden Rule, work ethic. Kamala Harris is the czar of engineered recidivism. As a prosecutor in San Francisco, she engineered recidivism, just like Uncle Sam is doing nationwide. Every Democrat prosecutor, DA, and court system in America is engineering intentional recidivism on purpose. Who would want America to look like the feces and needles engineered recidivism hell zone of Kamala Harris's California? What kind of freak, Lars, would wish that upon this nation?
By the way, the latest nasty emails I got, they said, you talk to Ted Nugent. I said, well, not all the time, but we talk on occasion. And he said, he likes teenage girls, or did at one point in your life. And they said, he's a bad guy. And I know you've had to answer that before, but I'm curious.
Well, yeah, when I was a teenager, I really liked teenage girls a lot. You know, they can't debate me. The communists, the punks, the Democrats, they can't debate me, so they have to lie. All those false accusations are absolute lies, and everybody knows it. Even the fake accusers know it, but they can't debate me because I've got truth, logic, and common sense on my side. They have nothing but hate and lies on their side. What a shame we've come to this position, but here we are. I wasn't at Iwo Jima, but I'm here now.
Let me ask you this. Keith Richards, you say, is a hero of yours, but he really severely disappointed you. Would you mind telling my audience what that was about?
Yeah, I have a Real America Voice Spirit Campfire podcast from the Arsenal of Democracy, Man Cave Cuckoo's Nest, where I do it every week with my beautiful wife, Shemaine, and my dogs. And I reminisce the wonderful, stimulating, exciting stories of my unstoppable rock and roll, rhythm and blues, soul music career. And one of those was a weekend with Keith Richards, my Chuck Berry baton-passing hero of the Rolling Stones, who really inspired all the greatest guitar licks in the world, and every guitar player will tell you that. And he was so stoned and so drunk the whole weekend that we couldn't have a meaningful conversation. I'm not knocking the guy, but he's made a life out of being stoned and drunk, and he's created the greatest music in the history of the world. But I wanted to talk to him about his Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and Little Richard and Motown Funk Brothers inspirations, but he couldn't form a sentence. I was really let down because I know he and I both came from that black American rhythm and blues, soul music, gospel music, and it was real let down because a lot of musicians I'm able to have great, great conversations with about our musical inspiration, our music.
Ted, yeah, it's Ted Nugent, the Motor City Madman. When it comes.
And now, this musical message to anyone who wants to indoctrinate our school children.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Joe is a naysayer. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program. What do we disagree about?
Hey, thanks, Lars. I'm just really just I just don't like you painting people in two boxes. It's either this or that, conservative or liberal. And that kind of divisiveness is really not called for. That's the problem with politics this day. I mean, if you can be a Democrat like I am and a conservative, well, don't paint me in the liberal, you know, your broad brush.
Are you a Democrat and a conservative?
Absolutely.
Okay, then tell me this. Tell me this. So you identify with the Democrat Party, Kamala Harris, Jay Inslee, Tina Kotek, and all of their policies. Because remember, in politics, personnel is policy. If you choose Kamala Harris, you're going to get one set of policies. You choose Donald Trump, you're going to get another set of policies. We shorthand that as conservative and liberal. You identify with Kamala Harris, but you are a conservative. Can you tell me how you square that up?
Yeah, because I can't vote for a convicted felon.
Really? His felony conviction is your big objection.
I can't vote for a guy who's a convicted felon.
Okay, hold on. Joe, let me ask you a detailed question. What felony was he convicted of?
What felony? Do you know he was convicted?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering if you know. I'm wondering if you know. Do you know what the felony was? Fraud. Now, let me ask you about that. How much you know about that? In fraud, when somebody gets cheated by deception, there's a victim.
Character matters.
I'm asking you a question. Joe, I can tell why you don't want to take this question, do you? You're afraid of the question, aren't you?
No, the questions are always misleading.
No, if I ask, you brought up the felony. I ask you what felony. You said fraud. I said, who lost money in that deal?
Okay, well, I'm not going to go into details.
I know you're not going to go into it because there was no victim. There was no money lost. And in fact, the purported victim said, we'd love to do business with him again. Now, that is the strangest kind of fraud conviction I've ever heard of, where nobody lost any money, there were no victims, and the people who might have been the victims are the people who said, we'd love to loan Donald Trump some more money. Joe, thanks. I can tell you've been reading the Democrat talking points. Let's go to Gary. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello, Lars. I'm 79, an ex-cop, ex-Vietnam vet.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. I enjoyed it. Do it all over again. Anyway, I wrote the Trump campaign a memo suggesting that he hire his own security force. I don't trust the Secret Service. And he could find some ex-SEALs, ex-Special Forces guys. And if he has to have them vetted, hire Dan Bongino to vet them, whatever. But that's one point.
Gary, help me understand. Number one, it'd be millions and millions of dollars, which is a cost that should be borne by the American taxpayers, protecting our leaders and candidates for office. And I don't mind paying that money. But tell me this, if you replace them with private security, they have no authority under law, do they?
Well, I don't know any of that. He does have
Gary, is if you're private security and somebody shoots at your protectee, you can shoot back in self-defense, but you can't shoot until they present an identifiable threat. The Secret Service, if they got up on that roof in a timely fashion, which they didn't, they could have stopped that young man. They could have seized his weapon. They could have placed him under arrest. Private security can't do that. So would that work out well?
Well, I don't know. The other point I wanted to make though was I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
The other point I wanted to make was there was a lady about 5'5" who couldn't find her holster, and yet they told us all those Secret Service people take 2 years to train, a year to hire a year to train. Apparently, well. She wasn't trained at all. And the other thing I wanted to make was I just went wild boar hunting at age 79. I shot a boar at 150 yards, and he dropped in his tracks and did not suffer at all. I made a perfect hit. And if I can do that at 79, my God, I can't believe these people couldn't have covered that rooftop. That was just an obvious, and the tower, both.
They should have had a man on the tower and a man on the rooftop, and you're absolutely right. Gary, congrats on the boar hunt. Let's go to Neil. Hey, Neil, it's First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a question about the college loan forgiveness.
Sure, go for
plan
it.
Thing. It's long been my understanding that if you have a major loan forgiven or paid off or whatever, the IRS looks at that as income and expects you to pay taxes on that.
They generally do, unless the Congress exempts you, and they could well do that. And you know, because they can do that, and it just depends on how the income comes and how it's labeled. They could say it's tax-free or not, and that's one consequence. But I guess that skips past the question of Why are all of the rest of us paying off the bad student loans of people who got stupid degrees?
Well, it just, it makes me nervous that nobody's really talking about it. It makes me feel like maybe, just maybe, they're going to wait till it's all forgiven and then tell them, oh, hey, by the way, people that we just forgive your loans, you now owe us, you know, tax money.
And they may well do that. And if they have to pay some taxes on what really is income, it serves them right. Neil, thanks for the call. You've got the Radio Northwest
Network. The Lars Larson Show.